Our next case is 2020-1117, the State of Ohio versus Candale L. Harrison. For the appellant, Ms. McFaul.
May it please the court, good morning. I'm Tina McFaul, representing the defendant appellate Candale Harrison. I'd like to reserve 7 minutes for rebuttal. Candale Harrison raises two propositions of which are related both legally and factually. The third district declined to make a finding of the status of a document that purports to be an arrest warrant, which does not contain the signature of the issuing judge or any other court official prior to his arrest. You can reference defense.
Does there need to be an arrest warrant at all in this case?
There does need to be an arrest warrant in this case.
Why? He was arrested in a public place for probable cause.
The state failed to raise that argument in the trial court. In the trial court, from its opinion, clearly follows the minority, which the second district under state.
But you can't be in the minority of the U.S. Supreme Court and the Ohio Supreme Court, right?
Well, in this issue, the Ohio Supreme Court in State v. Heston said that in Ohio, you have to have probable cause in exigent circumstances or a warrant if it's practicable to get one. And that was in 1972.
Yeah, but we were pretty clear that in Brown that you don't have to have a warrant, right? If it's
Brown was decided in 2007, and Brown actually did not reverse Heston and say that you don't have to have a warrant. And in Brown, it's factually distinguishable from Harrison because the police stopped Brown for an unauthorized license plate.
Okay, but if we follow the common law rule, which the U.S. Supreme Court has said there's a common law rule that you don't need an arrest warrant to arrest someone in a public place. What does it matter whether this warrant was invalid or not?
I don't think it's clear that we follow that rule in State v. Benoit, which was in 2010.
Assume for a second that we did. Just assume for a second that we actually met what we said in Brown, and that we do follow the rule, and we follow what the U.S. Supreme Court has said. Is that the end of the matter?
Well, in this particular case, there was a GPS warrant that was issued prior to the stop. So for practical purposes, Mr. Harrison was not just randomly in public when they stopped him. They were tracking him for more than that issued on February 13th.
Well, but it wasn't a public place when he was arrested, right? And you have to concede there was probable cause for the arrest, right?
If there's a probable cause for the arrest, if he were in a public place, and
well, I was a public place, right? He was on the road.
He was on the road. But in this particular case, the state never rose that issue at the trial level, and Mr. Harrison did not get an opportunity to respond. If he had been given that opportunity, he could have raised the issue about the GPS being warrant also being issued without probable cause. The vehicle in the case wasn't registered to Mr. Harrison. He had only been seen in the vehicle on February 2nd, and prior to being issued. And if you look at page 70 and 71 of the transcript from September 10th, Detective Joseph said he had the GPS and was using it just so he could arrest Mr. Harrison when he got a warrant and he was ready to.
But in the intervening, wasn't there a traffic stop?
There was no traffic stop. And the trial court was clear on that. And the transcript, Ms. Officer Lehman only stopped Harrison's vehicle because he was told that there was a warrant for his arrest. And there was subsequently no warrant. And that's why the trial court found that there was no warrant in this case. And there was no other probable cause reason to stop the vehicle.
Counsel, the federal rules, criminal rule 4 requires a signature. And the Ohio criminal rule does not, correct?
Well, the Ohio rules, if you're referring to the Ohio rules in criminal rule 4, yes. The trial court.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. The trial court found that to be issued, it had to be signed, that there it was synonymous with being signed, that in this particular case, and in every case, that without a judge's signature, nothing can be said to be issued.
Well, I mean, if we wanted to say signed, we could be like the feds and say sign. Instead, we use the word issued, right? Those are two different words.
Those are two different words, but I would refer back to the trial court's decision that without a signature, then what would issued amount to?
But Ms. McFaul, if we go back to February 2nd, 2018, when Detective Joseph used the confidential informant to make a controlled buy of cocaine from Harrison, wasn't that enough for probable cause, regardless of what transpired after that point? He already had probable cause, and presumably he let some time elapse to protect that confidential informant. But, you know, all this that happened with going to get this, getting the GPS, I'm just not sure that we even get to these issues, including good faith belief, because of that February 2nd confidential informant buy.
Well, that confidential informant buy, I would agree. If he had arrested him at that moment, he would have had probable cause to arrest.
But wouldn't that supply the same probable cause when he finally did arrest him?
I would again rely on State v. Benoit, State v. Heston, and State v. Jones. And so did Mr. Harrison in his pro se motion to suppress filing on April 4th. I believe
it's documented. Counsel, how does probable cause, if it's established, and you agree the controlled buy was probable cause, correct?
Correct.
How does that go stale? How does that not become, as legitimate when this was, when the warrant was sought?
Well, if the Fourth Amendment of the Ohio Constitution specifically says that a warrant is required to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures and should not be granted by anything less than based upon probable cause, but there is a warrant requirement. And under okay. Xenia
well,
B.
Well, 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 there's not always a warrant requirement. As Justice DeWine pointed out, if the individual's outside of their home, in a public place, there's probable cause. The officer knows that there was a controlled buy and here a warrant was sought and issued. And there's nothing wrong with that probable cause. You would agree with that. The controlled buy is a probable cause.
The controlled buy is a probable cause.
Okay, that starts everything. That starts everything in motion. All right, and then Mr. Harrison is arrested in public, a public place.
He is arrested in a public place in a vehicle that's not registered to him. And
well,
that
doesn't the vehicle's registration. There was a warrant to put the GPS on, right?
There was a warrant to put the GPS on.
So that's legit. To have that done, and I think that I don't see a problem with that. So what's your next argument that this was inappropriate?
Well, I would argue that a warrant was required because of the passage of time under the previous cases that I've stated and State v. Heston that was not explicitly overruled by Brown. And the Second District Court of Appeals has been applying Heston, Vannoy,
Counsel, remind me how much time passed.
how much time from February 2nd until the warrant was issued?
Yeah.
Purportedly issued. That was Detective Joseph took 4 pages into the Belt Fountain Municipal Court on February 27th to get a warrant. And later, sometime that day, picked up 2 pages.
All right. So he had, so 3 weeks later, he gets a warrant.
Yes.
And the council, the reason was to hopefully break the link between the controlled by's informant and the activity of the police.
I don't believe that he ever testified to that. He just said that he hadn't gotten to it when he got on February 13th to get the GPS warrant. And I don't think he ever testified in the hearing that he was trying to break the link for the informant.
Okay. Is there some indicia of or time limit here that there's a progression here? The controlled by, he gets then 10 days later a award for the GPS. It's not like there was inactivity between the controlled by and on the 27th. It's a progression that law enforcement is working the case.
Well, the warrant, the GPS warrant said that it was in effect while they were investigating the case or 45 days, whichever was earlier. And Detective Brent Joseph testified that he was following the GPS on the day that the stop was made for the specific purpose to effectuate the warrant, not investigating the case. And that is the transcript from September 10th at page 70 and 71.
But if the warrant is of no consequence, meaning it wasn't good and we don't even have to argue about the good faith exception, didn't he still have probable cause to make a public arrest without a warrant?
Without the GPS warrant, he would not have been able to make the public arrest. He wouldn't have known where Mr. Harrison was.
But there's no question about that warrant being okay, correct?
Well, that warrant says that it's in effect as long as there's an ongoing investigation of Mr. Harrison and or 45 days, whichever is earlier. And as I've
said, 2 weeks then, the 13th to the 27th.
And as I've said, Detective Joseph testified in September 10th hearing on page 70 and 71 that he was using the GPS not to investigate Mr. Harrison, but to keep track of him so he knew where he was when he had the warrant to serve on him. So there was not an ongoing investigation, but the GPS was still on the vehicle at that time. So I would argue that the warrant had lapsed on the GPS once the investigation stopped and he was continuing to follow that for
counsel,
the sole purpose.
Counsel, was this ever argued any place, what you're telling us now?
It wasn't argued at the trial level because the state failed to raise the issue of no warrant being needed. So if the state had raised the issue that no warrant was needed at the trial level, Mr. Harrison could have then had the opportunity to argue that the GPS warrant was infirm and that made a difference in this particular case. And even State v. Watson and Brown suggest that the Fourth Amendment needs to be analyzed with the facts of a particular case in mind.
All right, Counselor, you're pretty much out of time. All right, Mr. Stewart.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Eric Stewart for the state of Ohio. So the purpose of the exclusionary rule is to deter police misconduct. It's supposed to be a deterrence against deliberate, reckless, or grossly negligent conduct. And in this case, the defense has not pointed out any misconduct by the police. They point to a missing signature on the warrant, but that would be conduct by the court, not by law enforcement. And so,
counsel, let me ask you about this a procedure that apparently is being done in this court system, that as soon as a judge signs a warrant, it is put on a public docket. And so that was the, you know, the problem, or I guess the motivation for only having the court initial the complaint, and with the, I guess, code or the, you know, assurance that probable cause was present. And then once the warrant's executed, the judge signs it, and then the clerk can put it on the public docket. Right?
Correct. The impetus, the request from law enforcement was, please don't put it on the public docket.
Yeah, I understand that. I understand that. Okay. But okay, can't the judge sign the warrant and not deliver it to the court, I mean, to the clerk, to put on the public docket?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because, well, then what's with this, you know, the process? I got the impression that this is standard operating procedure.
Well, it's not now. After the trial court issued a decision, the clerks down there were horrified. And so they made sure the judge signed it, and but they still keep it off the docket. So
okay, so that really wasn't a legitimate motivation for having this little signature on the complaint and withholding the signature on the warrant. It was just a misguided a protocol. I don't know who put it in place, whether the court, well, the court obviously had to be part of it, and the clerk's office, but that wasn't at the insistence of the police department to not sign that document.
Exactly. In fact, the law enforcement thought that they were understanding that it was being signed, but that they certainly did not request that the court not sign it. That was not. So in fact, Detective Joseph thought that he had a valid arrest warrant in his hand when they called him and said, the judge approved the warrant, come get it. They picked it up. He thought he had a good arrest warrant.
Counsel, what your colleague said is that this issue of that probable cause already existed, there was no need for a warrant, was not argued at the trial level. Is that correct?
I disagree. The state's argument has always been that there's probable cause. There was probable cause for the arrest, whether there was an arrest warrant or not. Now, did the state cite to revised code 2935.03 at the trial court? No, we did not. But our argument has always been a probable cause argument. This isn't like an issue of standing where the state needs, both sides actually need to develop the facts. There's burdens of proof. There's shifting burdens that have to be addressed. And in this case, there's just not that. The issue has always been, was there probable cause one way or the other? And that was established. In fact, the defense never really argued against the fact that there was probable cause. Their whole argument has been regarding the missing signature.
Well, why didn't you just say below that it doesn't matter if there's a warrant because this arrest is valid? You didn't say that in the trial court. You didn't say that in the court of appeals, as far as I can tell.
That's a good question. It probably just didn't dawn on me at the time to raise that argument, but it clearly is a valid argument that they didn't even need one. I think the defense raises the issue of how much time can pass before. Can years go by before they effect a warrantless arrest based on probable cause in a public place? I think there still has to be some reasonableness involved in that. And the state cites to Hovater from the 5th District, where they found that 5 months in between the criminal activity and the arrest was reasonable. In this case, we're only looking about 4 weeks after the criminal activity. So I think that would be certainly reasonable to effect an arrest, warrantless arrest.
Counsel, was there anything about this procedure that was in place in this courthouse that confirmed that the judge actually reviewed the affidavit of probable cause before stamping it and sending it to the clerk's office? Was there any check in the procedure that confirmed that?
I'm not sure if I understand your question, but...
Well, as I understand the procedure is the judge made it the policy that he wouldn't sign it until after the arrest, so the name didn't go into the system. But I'm just trying to figure out if there was any check in this procedure to, that confirmed that he actually read the affidavit. For instance, I mean, he's supposed to read the affidavit, and there might be instances where there was not probable cause established.
Okay. Well, I can't tell you about procedure, but I can tell you what the clerk testified to. The clerk testified that she did, that the Judge Beck did review the affidavit and did review the complaint and approved it, stamped it probable cause and initialed it. So
the judge applied the stamp and then sent it to the clerk.
Yeah, it has the judge's initials on that stamp.
Okay. All right, thanks.
So, counsel, what you're relying on here is the good faith exception overarching this whole thing, no matter what happened, you know, whether the initials and the stamp are good or whether, you know, obviously the issuance of a warrant, does issuance require a signature? Put all that aside. The detective had a good faith belief that he had a valid warrant when he stopped and arrested the defendant here, whether it was in public or whether it was, you know, any place else, he thought he had a valid warrant, and that was based on good faith. And since the police officer didn't precipitate the confusion about the validity of the warrant within the court, that bolsters his good faith.
Yeah, that's exactly the state's argument. And the, you know, the third district, they also kind of went the same way. They saw, well, we don't really want to get into whether a signature was required or wasn't required under criminal rule 4. Obviously, the officer in this case was acting in good faith. He believed he had a valid arrest warrant. Yeah, even
should we get into that, counsel? Should we answer that question if we say good faith? You know, the irregularities of the court and the clerk are irrelevant here because the officer knew that there was probable cause. He had gotten a legitimate GPS warrant. And to effectuate the arrest, he had a document in his hand that he believed was a valid warrant.
Yes, I would say that, because at this point, you know, the Belfount Municipal Court has already changed their procedure.
But good faith is based on an objective belief and not a subjective belief. And when you see on the second page of that warrant that it's not even dated or signed by a deputy clerk, when it says you are hereby commanded to arrest defendant, I mean, how could that objectively be good faith when it's blank and anybody could look at it and see that?
Well, the detective testified when he picked up the packet, because we're talking about a packet of papers here. The very first page is the complaint, and he saw the stamp, probable cause found, signed by the judge. At that point, he thought he was good. There was no evidence to the contrary that he had flipped further through the docket, through the document. When he had presented that packet of papers to municipal court, it had an attached warrant. It did not have an attached summons to it. So it was reasonable for him to assume that a warrant had been issued because he saw the judge's initials, saw the probable cause finding. The clerk told him that the judge had issued a warrant. So I think he was perfectly reasonable. He certainly wasn't reckless or grossly negligent.
Well, and if we apply an objective standard, which means that the officer should know what the law is, wouldn't a reasonable police officer have known they didn't even need a warrant, so it didn't matter for this arrest?
Yeah, there's that too. Yes. And you know, finally, really, when you look at the signature requirement, is that really a constitutional violation? The Constitution requires probable cause, and I think everyone, you know, the trial court, the third district, have found that there was probable cause for this arrest. If there is some defect in the warrant because of the missing signature, that would be a statutory or criminal rule violation. That's not a constitutional violation. And only constitutional violations require exclusion or suppression of the state's evidence. I have nothing further, so
thank you. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Stewart. Ms. McFaul, I think you've got a little over a minute left.
If the good faith, if this court is looking at whether or not a warrant was valid and issued, Detective Joseph said he took a 4-page document in to be signed. The complaint, the warrant, and 2 pages of affidavit. What he picked up was 2 pages, and those 2 pages were the warrant and the complaint. And if you only look at those 2 pages, which is all he had when he thought he had the warrant, then no reasonable person could have found probable cause based on those 2 documents that he had in his hand. That probable cause sticker stamp said there was a hearing held. Detective Joseph knew he didn't participate in a hearing. He no longer had the attached affidavit. There was nothing more than a conclusory statement that Mr. Harrison had trafficked in drugs, and that is it. So no reasonably objective officer could have thought they had a valid warrant when it wasn't signed. It had no command. There was no command whatsoever to arrest anyone on it. And the probable cause, just on what the judge reviewed, purportedly was lacking. It wasn't until March 6th that affidavit as exhibit 1 showed back up, and there was no timestamp on there, no signature from the judge, no indication on either document at any point that the judge ever saw that affidavit. And the warrant was signed.
Counsel, is there a place for a judge to sign the officer's affidavit?
There was not a place for the judge, but there was no indication, and the warrant wasn't signed. So there's no way to tell what the judge relied upon in this particular case.
The warrant was signed subsequently, and there is the stamp, probable cause, I think probable cause, and the initials of the judge. What do we make of that?
Well, the judge didn't sign the warrant subsequently. A deputy clerk did.
Okay.
The judge didn't sign the warrant subsequently. There was no signature from a judge on the warrant at any time.
Was that necessary? I mean, you're saying because there was no signature on the warrant from the judge, that's fatal. That's a constitutional violation.
I'm saying that there's no way to make a determination whether or not the judge ever saw the affidavit that was purportedly attached. It wasn't attached when Detective Joseph picked it up. I don't know at what point or if it ever was attached within the meaning of a regular meaning, a fixed, stapled. There's no indication that that was in fact true. So even though Carla Stevenson testified, the judge at the trial court level said he's free to evaluate the credibility of the testifying witness and make a factual determination. And the judge said that Carla Stevens gave testimony, but he relied on Defense Exhibit H. And it's clear from his opinion that there is no attached affidavit that would support the judge had ever seen it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We will take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision.
Thank you.